I tell you, that's a constant focus for us, is to continue to figure out how to maximize Kevin Durant. No one's done it yet. I believe we'll be the first team to do it, because if we can maximize him, we can maximize our entire roster. We're a better team. But that's not an issue. I think Kevin had a phenomenal season this year offensively. I think there's a stretch. He had some of the best stretches of his career this year. So it wasn't an offensive thing. It wasn't just a utilization or a usage thing. It was just the totality of figuring out when and where and how to do it together. We just could not get on the same page. We ran out of time.
That's James Jones, the president of basketball operations for the Suns, back on Wednesday. Another sample of the press conference availability from both James Jones and Matt Ishbia that has a lot of people talking.
Yes.
Nobody's been able to maximize Kevin Durant, a 14-time All-Star, 2-time champion, 2-time finals MVP, four-time scoring champion, a member of the 75th anniversary team of the NBA. And, by the way, going into year 18...
Wow. Yeah, how about that?
Nobody's been able to maximize.
Yeah.
Is that, you think, a reaction to maybe a subconscious reaction to that piece that came out that said Kevin Durant was unhappy with his role in the offensive
That might be. That might be. I can't for the life of me understand the genesis of the comment or what it is supposed to mean. I do know that along with Matt Ishbia's relentless optimism, that it did not hit well. In fact, a lot of Warriors fans started trolling, like, oh, really? You think he was good for you? Did you see what he did for us? Did you see his efficiency numbers when he played for us?
Kevin Durant was, especially in those two finals where he won the MVP in a Golden State uniform, otherworldly in both of those postseasons.
He's won a league MVP.
Yeah. But to say that he's got a level higher than that at this stage of his career... Not knocking Kevin Durant, it just seems improbable.
It was such a weird way of phrasing, which I hope is what he meant, was we haven't maximized Kevin Durant based on his ability and what he's done so far.
Clearly not what he said, though.
I know, I know. Because if he says, like, you know, we need to figure out a better way to utilize him among the big three on this team, we need to figure out how to maximize his value and his... ability.
Yeah. And then you wonder if Kevin Durant really is kind of unhappy now a little bit about his usage in the offense and about anything in general. I'm not sure that's going to help. If you're KD and you're hearing your GM say that, I don't think he's going to nod his head and go, yeah, you're right. You guys, I haven't been maxed out yet. You guys, you're right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, Kevin Durant's a very, very proud guy, obviously.
He is. But also, if the suggestion is we're not getting the most out of Kevin Durant, at this point of his career, who expects Kevin Durant to change what he does?
Exactly. Exactly. Look, there are thoughts that his role in the offense, I mean, how willing is he to try different things? How willingly is he coached? I think these are questions that probably only Frank Vogel could answer. And I wonder this a lot. As ineffective as Frank Vogel seemed to be on a lot of fronts, I just don't know how coachable this team was. When you talk about its high-end talent.
But how fair even is it, sort of what you were saying there, a guy who's going to be 36 next season, how fair is it to ask him to do more?
You're right. Then what he gave this team, which is what, 75 games played, 76 games played.
27 points per game.
27 per game, logging 37 minutes per game.
To say that you're not maximizing him is essentially saying that he needs to do more on the team, which is...
And again, so I just worry that kind of comment is going to make KD kind of roll his eyes.
Yeah.
And maybe make a situation worse. Maybe.
Well, you know, the reaction to this... outside of the Suns organization, apparently, is, oh, it didn't work, got to blow it up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of life in the NBA these days. So
there was I want to play this cut from our guy, Amin El Hassan.
Yes.
He was on an interview with a Bay Area radio station, and the question was, clearly, trade rumors are floating around this team. We all know that. Whether they're true, false, whatever, whether it bothers you, whether it doesn't bother you, it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so in Golden State, they're wondering, should we go back and get KD? But I think it's interesting the way he categorizes KD's mindset.
Yeah, I'm going to play the entire clip for you. It's a little lengthy, but it's good stuff.
I just don't see it happening for several reasons. I think for Kevin specifically, well, first of all, the Phoenix Suns, I don't think would entertain that sort of move, because what it would basically be kind of a teardown, or kind of like, let's start this thing over. And I don't think Matt Ishbia is in that kind of frame of mind. Matt Ishbia, the principal owner of the Suns. But the other part of it is that Kevin's been searching to kind of distance himself from what he accomplished in Golden State. And specifically, Kevin definitely has sought to distance himself from playing that style of basketball. So going back to kind of being an auteur, a savant who does everything isolation and basically can get his bucket any way that he wants. He doesn't want to come off of down screens and split action and all that stuff. If he did, he would have done it in Brooklyn. He would have done it in Phoenix. But he's resistant to that kind of play, I guess, because he finds it insulting, or maybe deep down, like I said, it just reminds him of his time in Golden State, where he wasn't his version of himself. He was kind of the Warriors version of himself. So I just think there's a lot of baggage there from him specifically that will kind of prevent that from happening.
Yeah, that's El Hassan from 95.7 The Game in San Francisco. That's very interesting.
Yeah, especially the idea of not wanting to participate in certain offensive sets, because you are what you are and you do what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find that to be really fascinating at a lot of different levels.
And it goes back to the starting point of this conversation on maximizing Kevin Durant. If it's... he's resistant to play certain types of basketball. And look, Kevin Durant's numbers were actually down in the regular seasons he played in Golden State. Now, they were still very good. He averaged 26 points per game two of the 3 years, 25 points a game. But he was at 27 this year, a top five scorer in the NBA. But does maximizing Kevin Durant just mean now, all right, Kevin Young is the architect of this offense. He's on his way to Provo to coach BYU. You just sit down and say, Kevin, what do you want to do offensively? Is that what maximizing Kevin Durant means?
Wow.
And what does that do to your other two world-class offensive players?
Exactly. There are people who blame Kevin Durant for a lot of different things. People say that it wasn't so much going to Golden State that was bad. It was leaving Golden State. I heard somebody say that you have to look at it from KD's perspective, because while he was in Golden State, all he ever heard was criticism about joining. You have to leave. You've got to do this on your own. That's all he heard.
Ring chaser.
Yes. That's all he heard. So anybody would think, oh, I got to get out of here. I do have to go do this on my own. So I'm sympathetic to some of this stuff with him. This is just, all of it's very, very confusing. If Suns fans feel unmoored and uncertain, a little anxious, you got good reason.
Oh, I think so, definitely. Coming up next, the rest of the NBA. Philly fans are freaking out after their latest playoff exit for a number of reasons. We'll get into some of those and more NBA headlines next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
I'm burning. Come on. Come on.
Arizona Sports.
Bowling.
Floor Burns with Bickley and Marotta.
Why just dunk it? Why just straight?
Shot clock at 18. Brunson up top. Hart. Wide open, three-pointer, fires away, knocks it down. Josh Hart puts the Knicks up by three. Knicks need one final stop here. Batum into heel, turns, throws it up. It is no good. Rebounded by Hart, dribbles out of traffic. Knicks win. Knicks win the series in six, and the Knicks are advancing to round number two.
That's 98.7 ESPN in New York. The Knicks are moving on. Tremendous six-game series in the first round. It was the best one on paper going into it. Lived up to that billing. And the Knicks just continue, man. The way they play basketball is kind of relentless. They were relentless in that series. They move on. Philly goes home, and Philly put them into that group of teams, kind of like the Suns right now, kind of like the Milwaukee Bucks, who we'll get into in a second. Falling short in the postseason in numerous years has people asking a lot of questions about the Philadelphia condition. And part of that condition was, you hit on this earlier, you mentioned it earlier, the psyche of the Philly sports fan has to be destroyed this morning.
Mm-hmm.
Because once again, in a game in their arena, it was invaded by New York Knicks fans.
Mm-hmm.
Philly ownership went to the lengths of buying 2,000 tickets to prevent what happened in game four of that series with the Knicks fans taking over. Not only did the Knicks win on their court and all of their fans were there, did you see the scenes in the concourse after the game?
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
With, like, expletive-filled chants in Philadelphia about Philadelphia. That should not happen in that city.
No. No, you're absolutely right. And the fact that the owner had to go to that length in the first place is embarrassing. And so I think it speaks to a couple of different things. Number one, I don't know what's happened to Philly, but I think that dude who got all the Philly baseball fans to go easy on, who was that player again that they...
Trey Turner?
When it was
we had him on the show, the reporter.
Yes.
Jack Fritz.
Look at this guy. Yeah, so when Jack Fritz appealed to Philly to get in touch with your softer side, give this guy a break.
Jack Fritz. We haven't done that in a while. I don't have anything ready.
Okay. there were people like, this ain't Philly. What's wrong with this place? And, you know, I've heard this about Boston for years, that this hard-ass sports media town no longer exists, mostly because of the Patriots, because the Patriots got really good and it created a dynamic in the Boston media that we got to kiss the ring if we're going to get any access at all.
Yeah.
And as a result, they kind of got mushy. And I think when you look at Philly now, not only have their teams choked a lot, Eagles, Phillies, now the 76ers, this sports town, I mean, the fact that an opposing fan base can do that to them, wow.
I mean, as a Phoenix fan, I put myself in the shoes of a Philly fan and how much that would, I mean, and we're used to it here.
Mm-hmm.
So take that feeling and multiply it by 100 for a Philly fan.
Yep.
I mean, where they can walk around, puff their chest out. I give credit to the Knicks fans for being that passionate, and they've been waiting a long time to have a team like this. I get it. But man, it must have been a sickening feeling. Not only did you lose on your home floor, you got punked on the way out.
They were saying they were close to not even selling out that game, that they had to give away tickets to service members and stuff.
Really?
To fill it up, But I mean, you get in also Philadelphia, I think, always has that little brother syndrome to New York, just being on the East Coast that close.
Mm-hmm. I get
it. So this must really be.
Yeah.
The other thing of this is not just what's happening to Philly, it's just how connected this Knicks team is with their fan base. This fan base is electric. I told you, my buddy in New York, it was one of these recent games at Madison Square Garden. He said, I've been going here for 30 years. I have never seen this place like this. And it's because of Jalen Brunson and the rest of those guys. Jalen Brunson, there's not a lot of sports stars who go to New York and pop. A lot of people go to New York and kind of
shrivel a little bit.
A little bit. And he, you see his numbers?
We call it Ed Whitsoning.
Whoa. I think that they feel like the 21 Suns to
me. They do.
And that they have one young superstar. And then they have a bunch of personalities and great chemistry and all this stuff. All the stuff that this year Suns doesn't have.
Mm-hmm.
You know who I feel bad for? Is Mikal Bridges. Mikal Bridges in the same city watching three of his college teammates on this great, wonderful team that's like ascending right now, all having fun, winning.
Did you see Jalen Brunson mess with Kenny Smith after the game last night? It was fantastic because the Villanova banners are hanging up in that Philly arena. It's where the Wildcats play their home games. And so he was dogging Kenny Smith because Villanova beat North Carolina in 16. Yep, or it was 18.
No, it was 2016.
16.
Yeah, that was the buzzer beater.
That's what it was. That's right. So it was. So he's like, he's reminding him of all those Villanova banners up there. So it was Jalen Brunson. This kid, what a killer.
That's the perfect word for him. And Josh Hart. Josh Hart hits the big shot on a play where he didn't want to shoot the ball. He got that ball, immediately looked to pass, and then was like, wow, there's nobody here.
I better shoot this ball.
How do you let that guy get that open at that time?
But again, though, this is like, you look at that Knicks roster, you could argue that there's no one on that team that would even be in the top three. You could say maybe Brunson is better than Bradley Beal right now, but you know what I'm saying? Like, three of the four best players would be on the Suns. Josh Hart, Dante DiVincenzo, these players are role players, and they're coming up so huge in big, huge games and stuff where these superstar teams can't do it.
They have found the formula that, you know, a lot of role player success is catching lightning in a bottle, and they've got lightning in a bottle right now. So Philly goes home. Milwaukee's going home. They got blown out in Game 6 by the Indiana Pacers. Damian Lillard came back. It wasn't enough. The Pacers move on for the first time in a decade. But we have to focus not on Giannis, not on Damian Lillard, not on Doc Rivers. We have to focus on reserve guard Patrick Beverley, who gave us more proof last night that he is the
worst.
During the game, at the end of the game, he gets into an altercation with a fan where he throws a basketball into the crowd, hitting a woman in the head.
Mm-hmm. He's going to get seriously reprimanded.
A male Pacers fan takes the ball and tosses it gently back to Patrick Beverley, who catches it, and then he chucks
fires
it at that fan.
Yeah.
Did you see Jay Crowder's reaction?
Oh, yeah.
He's like, what are you doing?
Yes. And then, yes, and then afterwards,
it gets worse. Patrick Beverley's being interviewed in front of his locker by the media, and this exchange happens.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, I've been, yeah. You subscribe to my pod?
Do I subscribe to you? I do not.
You can't interview me then. Okay. No disrespect. Well,
Jamal is here.
You subscribe? Okay, cool. Yeah. That's cool.
Again, there were a couple times within a bucket or two. In previous games, y'all have been able to kind of get over that hump. Or maybe.
Wake up my face, please.
Was it anything they did in particular, or was it just one of those where the bucket didn't go down, there wasn't the stop, they made one? What kind of prevented that you all from being able to get over, kind of like you have in the past?
You move that mic, please, or just get out the circle, please, for me, please, ma'am. If you're not subscribed to my pod, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Are you blanking joking me?
Unbelievable. He needs to get suspended for a long time, and I think he's going to. You cannot do what he did, throwing a basketball at a fan. Adam Silver's not going to tolerate that. This guy has lost his mind.
Again. It happens time and time again. Yeah. He can't handle being eliminated from the playoffs.
Which is amazing, because it happens
every
all the damn time.
Year, you should be used to it.
He's such a mediocre player, too. He's such a mediocre player who's literally on a different team every year. I don't know why teams keep putting up with these antics. It's not like he adds so much.
Look,
the interview thing, a lot of people are portraying it as misogynistic, which on the surface it is. I think it's just more him being an a-hole, because several reporters have said he's done that to all local media all year long, and he's kicked other people out of the locker room for not subscribing to his podcast.
How does the NBA allow that to happen? I was unaware of it if it's been happening all year. That is, I mean, I'm trying to weigh which incident is worse. Throwing a ball into the crowd and hitting a fan in the head is completely unacceptable. You might be able to explain it away by saying, hey, a fan in that area was riding Patrick Beverley the whole game and he's frustrated. Still not excusable. But with a level head to get the mic out of my face, do you subscribe to my pod, get out of the circle? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, now, so that to me, that had to be personal, right? I mean, you don't...
Apparently not.
No, like I said,
he's
kicked other media out throughout the year for not subscribing to his podcast.
It's unbelievable. You're right. The combination of things might lead to a long suspension.
He tweeted
this morning in the middle of the night, but I have to be better, and I will, with the praying hands emoji and the heart emoji.
I take it back.
Yeah.
I didn't know he had the praying hands emoji.
Well, in that case.
Coming up next, Sarah Cazell will take us through some big stories on this Friday morning. It's the Rush Hour Reboot, and it's next here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting, Arizona built for America's dreams.
Here we go, everybody. It is the Rush Hour Reboot on a Friday morning here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Thank you so much for joining us as we take you through everything you might want to know in Valley sports and beyond. I am Sarah Kazell with Dan Bickley.
Hey.
Yeah, a weary hey. Yeah. I hear that. Vince Murata.
And sure enough, me and Julian rub the sausage and we go back to back to start the inning.
He just killed Sarah.
Derek Carlin's here.
You killed Sarah, Vinny.
I didn't mean to kill anybody.
I don't know how to make sausage. I don't know what goes into sausage.
Well, that's the point. You're not supposed to.
You don't know. All you
want to know.
All you need to know is how to rub it. And a 10-game winning streak.
Baseball players are so veered, aren't they?
They sure are.
So juvenile. I love it.
But what is it about the summer sausage, like the way it's packaged, that makes it look so nasty?
Because it is nasty.
Okay, can I rat out a friend real quick?
Sure.
So for Christmas this past year, my husband and I just did stockings for each other. We didn't do like full blown gifts, just like, oh, I'll throw like a t-shirt in there, maybe some candy, maybe some scratchers, whatever. So I was asking my best friend, what do you put in your husband's stocking? Dead serious. She said, oh, like 3 packages of summer sausage. What?
Delicious.
You what?
Why wouldn't you?
It is delicious. That friend has been on a winning streak ever since.
That's right. Anyhow, hi, Courtney. Hi, Eric. You weirdos. Love you. All right, we're going to start off with the Suns here. We are starting to mentally shift from what in the hell was that season to, well, what do they do now? Rick Bucher, who I don't think a lot of Suns fans care for because he really gets right to the heart of what's wrong with them, the team, not the fans. He was on Colin Cowherd on FS1 this week. They spent a lot of time talking about the Suns and how they need to move forward. Rick Bucher said if the Suns want to get out of the roster situation they are locked into and attempt to compete in a very good Western Conference, he said the Suns should break up the Big Three and that should mean trading Devin Booker.
Suns fans are not going to appreciate this because he's one of their own. He's been there for 9 seasons. Devin Booker is the guy that you move. Not because I blame him for what happened, but because he by far could bring me the most assets.
The most assets. Wouldn't happen with Bradley Beal. Wouldn't happen with Kevin Durant. It would happen with Devin Booker. Is there any scenario in which trading Devin Booker makes sense to you or is a good choice?
No, to me, no. For a couple of different reasons, but I do think that that's you've got to reframe it. It's the thing to me is whether Devin Booker wants to be here or not. We're going to get into this in a little bit, but to me, it's a fundamental question. And I know that there's a lot of people locally who believe he's not going anywhere, that he belongs to Phoenix, but there's something different about him this year. We all saw it. We all felt it. So to me, it doesn't make sense. You just hope it isn't one of these situations where you've got to deal with an issue.
Yeah, to answer your question flatly, no, it doesn't make sense. And to go back to what Rick Bucher says, I'm not refuting what he says. It would bring the most assets. But what are the assets? If the assets are draft picks, that's a non-starter for this organization. They are not in rebuild mode, and they don't have interest in draft picks.
Yeah.
They've proven time and time again. So,
blank them picks.
What are you doing? Are you just bringing in a player or two to replace Devin Booker, who is honestly the face and the heart and the soul of this franchise? Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah. We will have SiriusXM host Justin Termini on with us at 8:30. He does a show with Eddie Johnson, so we will get his perspective on the Suns. About an hour from now, a little less than an hour from now, at 8:30. And the Diamondbacks are back at Chase Field tonight. They are getting ready to face the Padres for the first time this season, a little over a month into the season now. The D-backs are 4 games under 500. They are coming off a rough loss to the Dodgers, 8-0 on Wednesday night. But here is D-backs president and CEO Derek Hall on with us yesterday around this time. He said he thinks that his team is coming out of its funk.
You see Christian starting to hit the ball. Corbin, as we've talked about, you know, is starting to look like himself a little more. Mm-hmm. Gabby's looking like himself. Jake is having a pretty good offensive start. So I'm seeing signs. We just have to put it all together, and I know we will.
of course, this was before the news came down that Merrill Kelly would be going to the 60-day injured list. We knew he wouldn't be available for a while now, but now he is on the 60-day IL. How important is this weekend series, guys, to snap the D-backs back into form?
Yeah, it feels important to me. It feels like the Diamondbacks need to, you know, they need to rally around the sausage is what they need to do.
With a pocket full of shells. Yeah,
exactly. Oh, man, that sounds delicious. Yeah, some shells sausage.
I think they need something. I think they need something substantial and a good series, good, clean baseball, just something to kind of launch out of this little stage of the schedule that they've been in.
Yeah, it's very important, and I think they need to prove that they can sustain some things. When Jarrett dropped the little nugget that should have been obvious to me, but it wasn't when he said it, that they've not won more than two games in a row all season long, I was like, what? They haven't. Yeah. It's true. Jarrett actually was factually correct.
Actually contributed with the facts.
I would like to see a sweep of the Padres.
That'd be nice.
You want to announce yourselves? You can't feel sorry for yourself the whole season because you've been injured. And it's time for the guys that are out there to step up and start winning some games. I think this is a very important series. It's kind of a kickoff. You know, you're in a new month now, in the month of May. You had a day off at home, which is kind of a luxury for teams, especially teams that are struggling. Make the most of it.
Mm-hmm. Fresh start. Here we go. All right. The three-game series begins tonight, 6:40 from Chase Field on 98.7 and the Arizona Sports app. Make sure you tune in. A pregame coverage begins at 6.
All right. Very good.
Woohoo.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you. Rush Hour Subscribe Reboot. To my podcast or get the hell out of here.
Wait, if you're listening to the Rush Hour Reboot, we have to ask everybody, are you subscribed to the podcast? Because if not, just...
Hopefully you are, because I actually get a surprising number of tweets every week being like, oh, I missed the interview. I'm so sad I didn't. Hear it. You can catch it on our archive, on our podcast, ArizonaSports.com or the Arizona Sports app.
Yes. Yes.
The whole show is there.
Commercial free. You can win tickets to see the D-backs face off against the Padres this weekend. Listen for the sounder. Got it coming up still a few times on today's show and all day here on Arizona Sports. That's your chance to win. Just call in. And you could be attending Diamondbacks Padres sometime this weekend at Chase Field. Coming up next, big topic of discussion with the Suns is whose hands is the ball in? And does that need to change? We'll get into that and more next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
That's a narrative we'll hear a lot. Point guard, point guard, point guard, point guard, point guard, point guard. And I'm saying, sure, that's great. Who do you want? Like, who do you want? Like, who's available given the way we're built? Who can fit with this group? Whose game seamlessly fits with this group? And when you put that player on the floor and you take the ball out of someone's hands, whose hands are you taking it out of? And who are you putting in that position? And so it's more than just a position, like a point guard or small forward. It's the actual player that you can get or you do have. And so if we had the point guard that would be the best fit for this group, we'd find them if available. So I don't think there's anything wrong. I don't run away from saying we could benefit from having a point guard. I just don't think that was the answer to a lot of our problems.
That's James Jones on Wednesday. Point guard, a big topic of discussion, not just on Wednesday, but the entire season. I remember, I was just thinking back to conversations we had during the season when that subject would pop up because mostly of turnovers or disorganization and crucial points of close games. But I was even advocating at a certain point. They did have a point guard on the roster. His name was Saben Lee.
Yeah.
I remember advocating for more Saben Lee time because he just offered a different skill set than what was out there. And maybe there wasn't enough belief in Saben Lee to do that. Look, the Suns are in a sticky spot on this subject because of what they did last summer, and that's trading for Bradley Beal. So they've... You know, basically empowered Beal, Booker, Durant, and at times Yusuf Nurkic to be the initiators of offense. It worked at times. It didn't work at times. I think overall, everybody involved with the Suns organization would say that this is a sloppy team with the basketball. You can cut that down with a point guard. Now, to James Jones' point, point guard, point guard, point guard, point guard, point guard,
point guard, point guard, point guard, point guard.
And then asking the question, who's available? Well, looking at the list of free agents and with the restrictions that the Suns have, you're looking at minimum guys, and you might have to do a lot of coaxing for these minimum guys. Here's a few names that stand out as maybe realistic targets for a point guard if they go down that road. And tell me what your excitement level is.
All right.
Kyle Lowry, 38 years old, making a ton of money in his last year with Philadelphia. But he's not going to command $28 million. And he's 38 years old. Could he be a minimum guy?
He'd have to really want to be here.
Yes. But these are the types of players we're talking about. Reggie Jackson, who's actually got a player option in Denver for next year at $5.1 million.
All right.
Just on the surface, it seems like, do I want to exercise my option with a really good basketball team that might be coming off a second straight championship, or take a pay cut to go to the unknown?
Yeah.
Probably unlikely.
Probably unlikely.
Patrick Beverley.
Wow. Yeah, you probably get him for cheap.
Cameron Payne.
Couldn't help but think of you last night watching Cameron Payne for the Philadelphia 76ers. And I think that I probably think we haven't talked about this enough. It's so true when you're talking about a guy that was right there, a guy that loves Phoenix, that brings energy, that we all kind of tired on him a little bit because of his inconsistencies in the last postseason with Monty Williams. But when you think that the one outlier, the one move that the Suns ostensibly did just because, okay, look, we don't need this guy. We don't want this guy. We don't need to absorb this expense. It's like a team that has spent wildly saving a handful of pocket change. And I couldn't help but think about how campaign could have been a solution here.
Yeah, but I also think a part of that decision that went into it, too, was a misreading or maybe just a misstep on the optimism about Jordan Goodwin. They thought Jordan Goodwin was going to be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
The energy guy who could come in and organize the offense as a real gritty defender. It didn't work out. He got a chance early, and he squandered that chance pretty early.
That's
so
true.
When they were shaping this roster, it likely came down to, well, we got Goodwin in this trade. We got Cameron Payne. What do you want to do? And you know,
for them to be that wrong, though, I mean, they gave up on Goodwin so relatively quickly. I think maybe they just thought that with Booker and Beal that they just wouldn't need. Like, campaign just wouldn't play enough to make it worthwhile.
Yeah, those are the types of names that are going to be, if you want to go down that road for a veteran, and it seems like the Suns want to do everything in a veteran way. Now, they do have the 22nd overall draft pick, because they get a point guard at number 22. There's probably going to be some pretty good point guards, international point guards or college point guards available at that point, but are you empowering a rookie to come in with this group to help ball handling duties and initiating an offense? And a lot of the talk is, you know, the Suns say, we don't want to take the ball out of the hands of Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, and Devin Booker. Nobody does. Nobody wants them to get less shots.
Yeah, that's the difference.
The ball, it's a semantic thing. Mm-hmm. The ball needs to be in their hands in better positions to score
Indeed.
Than what we saw this past season.
Indeed.
That's all anybody is saying.
Well, and again, yes, that is all anybody is saying. And again, this is another one of those comments from that ill-fated press availability that they're getting roasted on. Because if you really are clinging to the idea that, no, we don't want to take the ball out of these guys' hands, immediately you look at the turnover numbers and how careless this team was with the basketball.
And it wasn't one player. It was all of the four players I mentioned earlier in this segment that can be brilliant passers, but can also be incredibly. I think part of the problem is overconfidence in passing. They think they can, especially Yusuf Nurkic, thinks he can make any pass on the floor. And a lot of times he makes it tremendous. He's a very good passing big man. But you don't have to make a highlight pass every time. And
no.
and even at the second half of the season, the Suns struggled to make the simple pass.
Yeah,
because the pressure was so intense on them because of their propensity to turn
without
it over.
A doubt. And we saw how hard it was for the Suns to get into offense when they were getting jumped, when they were getting harassed in the backcourt. And they need that to not be an issue going forward. So, yeah, I don't know what the name is to fill it. I just believe conceptually it's a very important element to a basketball team. Organically, spiritually, everything. What a point guard lives to serve. And I think you need that kind of person on the floor. So
I look, you're not alone, but they seem to think that they don't need that necessarily.
They seem, the thing that I think bothers fans the most about everything that was said the other day was not only that it doesn't seem to be our reality of what we experienced watching this basketball team. It feels like they're really having a hard time saying we might have been wrong. We might have messed that up. And that to me is almost more problematic than anything else. That if you're going to stick on something because you sure as hell aren't going to be proven wrong. I don't know.
It's, yeah, I mean, it's a delicate situation that they're in. We'll continue to talk Suns and what's coming up in the offseason. And what better way to kick off the second half of the show than with
Fire!
The Bickley Blast. It is next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, live from the Ak Chin Community Studios here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.